being here, and thank you, Steve, for leading that song, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds Our Hearts in Christian Love. That is something that is regularly on our minds when we come together, the blessing that we have built into this fellowship, the good that it provides, the great fortune that we have of being able to meet in any place where people of God are meeting together and immediately have not just friends but family members, those that we can call brethren, those that we can lean upon, those that can pray for us, those whom we can love even without fully knowing. The value of each other is a precious gift. And again, on a morning such as this, our minds certainly turn to that. When you see people that you love to see and maybe don't get to see as often as you would like to, you're reminded of just how special that is. The Lord's church is a vital part of His work. There's a sentiment that is common in religious circles today that a church is not needed. You can have your own relationship with God and really just be a Christian that kind of is a lone wolf, almost, a lone operative. While it is true that our relationship with God is personal, it is not possible for us to do the work that we need to do by ourselves, and it would be foolish to forgo the great blessing, the great benefit that we can provide to each other. The Christians who make up the Lord's church are among those gifts that He gives to us. Not to be corny, not to be sappy, but each person here is a gift. Each person here is a valuable gift to me, to each other, to each one of us. So I want to consider that together this morning, this precious resource that we do have in each other, in the Lord's body. Especially we think of those who are here at Woodland Hills, those whom we worship with and are members of each other. What can other saints offer? When we talk about what a good thing this is and how blessed we are to have each other, how blessed we are to have a church home, a church family, what are we actually talking about? Can we enumerate some of those blessings? Look in Philippians chapter 2, please. Philippians chapter 2, and begin reading in verse 25. This is one example text of many that we could look at. All of our passages will be that way this morning. But here's just one example of the encouragement and love that we find Christians being able to provide. Philippians 2, beginning in verse 25, I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, Paul says, my brother, my fellow worker and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed, he was sick almost unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I sent him the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice and be less sorrowful. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem, because for the work of Christ he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me. Here is a group of people under consideration, Paul, as well as Epaphroditus, as well as the saints in Philippi, who are all so concerned with each other. They are each motivated by their love for someone else, by their desire to provide something for someone else. The Philippians sent this man, Epaphroditus, to help Paul and to be there when he needed him. And Paul ended up figuring out, it's good, I'm glad to have him here, but he needs to go home so that you will quit worrying about him, and so that his, apparently he had some kind of health situation, he needs to be taken care of himself and go back so that you all can see him and receive him with that kind of joy. What keeps you going when you are weak and weary and going through a difficult time, as Paul was as he's writing to the Philippians, from jail? From jail is a kind word from it, for a kind word for it. He's writing from a dungeon, a hole in the ground. What keeps him built up? What was it that was a source of joy, who could meet his needs? A friend in Christ, a brother, a fellow saint, spiritual family can and should be as much of a support system as our physical families. I know we recognize that blessing that is inherent in them. They can strengthen you. They can keep you going. They can provide that love and support. In Acts chapter 2, in verse number 42, we find a description of the early church that shows another blessing that we can provide. Verse 42 of Acts chapter 2, those who were baptized, these 3,000 that originally made up the church, continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, in the breaking of bread and in prayers. He tells us the words that the apostles used to continue exhorting them. The church is a place where God's will for his people is known and loved and held in reverence and discussed with knowledge. We can find from each other that instruction and correction and advice and the things that are most important in this life, what we must do before God. Ideally, our relationships with God's people are such that we can receive everything we need at the times we need it. Advice from someone that we know well and who we know cares for us when we're dealing with a personal problem. You have that relationship with that person who has wisdom in God, and so when you're facing a difficulty, they can tell you what you need to hear. They can tell you what might be able to help see you through that problem. When we're straying or when we have missed the mark, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had such a close relationship with someone that they could offer a kind rebuke, that gentle correction that can help us to keep from straying further, and we'll be able to receive it as they intend it because we know they love me. We know that that person only cares about me, and that's why they're mentioning it in the first place, and it will then actually have its intended effect. To be able to receive that exhortation to continue on in faith when we need a boost, when we find ourselves low and lagging and needing a shot in the arm, wouldn't it be wonderful to have someone who could provide just that encouragement from the Scriptures that you need? Or a reminder of how great our salvation is when you're facing a struggle and when this life only seems dark and desolate. Or when we're trying to reach the lost, maybe you have established that first contact with someone. They are interested in the Scriptures. They are interested in your faith. Maybe they have asked you a question. They want to discuss something further, but you feel, I've hit a wall. I don't know what to say to them. I don't have the knowledge needed to explain something to this person. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you had someone who you could go to and say, will you help me study through a topic with someone, or will you maybe give me some things that I could say to this person that will help them to understand the truth as they need to? All of those things other saints can provide. All of that instruction and correction and knowledge can be shared when we have those relationships with each other. Or think of the examples and influences that are provided so many times. In Philippians, back in the book of Philippians, chapter 3 and verse 17, we find Paul making a statement that is something of a theme for him. He mentions this on a few occasions. Join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. We don't have to figure things out completely on our own as we are trying to walk as we have been called. I used to, maybe I've mentioned before, as a kid especially, I loved putting together Lego sets. And it's always been a pretty incredible thing to me with Lego sets. I guess it's a Danish company. You can put a Lego set together in any language. You could give that to someone in Russia. You could give it to somebody in China, somebody in wherever you wanted to. You would be able to do that because they're all pictures. And I've thought before how difficult it would be to try to walk someone through putting a Lego castle together over the phone. How would you even do that? All right, find the little gray one. It's kind of small, but like, you know, just short and not narrow. You're just small that way. But now put that one like two things over and then turn it to the, you know. No, you can't tell someone how to do that. When you're putting that together, you've got a picture. You have a picture that tells you this is what it's going to look like. Put this piece here, and this is what it should look like when you're done putting that piece on this one. And many people, many, many people I've encountered, especially as I've been preaching in my life. This is why I have a PowerPoint most of the time, by the way, because I don't know how many people have come to me and have said, if it looks like I'm drifting off when you're preaching, it's because I'm a visual learner. It's amazing how many people are sleepy visual learners. There's some connection there between our ability to stay awake and whether we learn through visual or auditory cues. So I've known a lot of visual learners in my preaching life. But that's accurate. A lot of us do learn that way, don't we? Show me something. Show me something that I can look at instead of just hearing something explain it. Well, we've got a model to look at. We're trying to figure out, I need to be a disciple of Christ. I need to follow Jesus Christ. But I'm a visual learner, so show me something. Yeah, I can read the text, and I do that. I can see what God wants from me, and I can understand those concepts, and I can get there. But, boy, it would really just be helpful if I had that model. That's what we find in the church. You look at that brother who's been walking the walk for 30 years longer than you have and has gone through the things that you have not yet encountered in your life, but you know you will have to encounter in your life. And you can see there's the example. As Paul says, join in following my example and note those who walk like I do because you've got us for a pattern. That's part of the reason we're here, is to show you how to do it. That's what Paul is telling them, and that's what we have. Associating with other Christians can also serve as a safeguard, a check against sin. If we're keeping good company who encourages us to pursue good things, our decisions and behavior are easier to make. You have that positive influence instead of someone who's always trying to pull you down into trouble as your peer group. What a great benefit we can provide. Of course, that's something we must also think of as well. Not just what we receive from everyone else, but the opportunity that we have to be a benefit to others. In Philippians chapter 2, we're seeing a lot in this book. Beginning there in verse 19, we read from verse 25 at the start. But if you read that entire section, we see that really what was motivating all of these men and what they were so pleased to do, Timothy, Epaphroditus, Paul, any of the saints in Philippi, what they loved to do and what they took pleasure in doing was in serving each other and providing that good, providing what was lacking. But that's something that brought as much pleasure and as much use to them as to anyone else. It's safe to assume that among people who have made that decision to serve the Lord and to serve each other, many would be motivated by noble goals because it is a noble calling. Isn't it even better to provide good than to receive it? A lot of the Christians I have known in my life would much rather give than receive. And they are the people that when you know they need help, they don't want to receive it. You go and try to bring them a meal, you say, can I give you a ride? You say, do you need help doing this? And they, no, I'm doing okay. You don't need to check on me. But you know, if you have a hangnail, they're going to be calling you on Monday morning saying, what do you need? What can we do for you? Tell me where I can be of service. Because that's their preference. But they're getting benefit from providing benefit to others. We have that opportunity among other Christians. You have built into your life as a member of this group, if you are such, you have over 100 opportunities to be able to provide service and encouragement to someone else. May we also say that as members of each other, as a household, as a family, if we are what we should be, the worship that we offer to our God becomes instantly more engaging. The things we try to accomplish as the secondary parts of our worship. Glory to God is always the first concern. But the other things that we're trying to accomplish when we come together to honor Him, that edification, that instruction, those are only enhanced by greater love for each other. And that greater love for each other can only come about through knowing and appreciating and being involved and being with each other. You sing more passionately with people you love, don't you? It simply is that way. I can think of so many times when I'm visiting a church that I used to be a member of, and you get to go back there 10 years later and see those people that you missed, and especially to hear those voices that you haven't heard in a while. Maybe you'll hear a tenor coming through that belongs to a friend of yours, and you think, boy, I miss hearing that voice. And you are emboldened to sing more passionately and to praise God all the more because of that. You listen more closely to the prayers and the readings and the talks of people that you love. I can tell you, some of you may like my preaching, some of you may not. There is not a person in this group who gets more out of my sermons than my wife. The only person who would have any claim to being 1A, my mom, when she visits, gets more out of my sermons than anyone else. Those are the two. You will never stand on their footing as saying, boy, that was a good sermon. I really appreciated that. You didn't like it the way they did. I can promise you that. Some of you are saying, yeah, no kidding. But that's true. Why is that? Because they love me more than anyone else here. I'm not saying we all just have to love each other to make it more palatable, but that's the natural outcome. You pray more earnestly for people that you love. When we're offering those prayers for the sick or those prayers for those who have been weakening and who need to return to the Lord, what means more when you're talking about a stranger or when you're talking about someone that you love so dearly and you just need them to feel better and you need them to do better? That worship that we offer to God is stronger, is more meaningful, more impactful, more engaging when we have true fellowship with each other. Well, if all these things are the case, how do I go about that? Where can I find it? The first point that we would make here is kind of in the goes without saying category. But the fact that this command does not go without saying is kind of alarming. So we must go ahead and say it. When Christians assemble, you need to be there. When the saints are gathering to worship God, to strengthen each other, if you are capable of being a part of that assembly, as a member of that group, as a person who is involved in that work, who is a fellow in that work, you need to assemble with them. I understand legitimate things come up, and we'll address that a little bit later. But if you're looking, you know, we're talking about this commodity, this resource. If you're looking for the mother lode of that precious commodity, it's in the regular assemblies of the local church. All of those things will be found there. That encouragement, that instruction, those influences, that good that you can be doing, all of those things are found in great measure when we assemble regularly. But let us go beyond that as well. The example we looked at earlier from Acts chapter 2 in describing the activity of that early church, I hope we notice in verse 46 that those saints were continuing daily with one accord in the temple. They were having those regular convening assemblies, assembling of themselves together, continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house. And they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. The record that we have of that New Testament church is that they didn't just see each other twice a week. They didn't just see each other every once in a while. They were part of each other's lives. They continued daily in their work and in their fellowship. How much closer do you feel to someone when you've shared a meal with them? You can worship on the same pew as someone for 10 years and not know them as well as you do than you do after the one time you invite them over to your home. Has that not been your experience? Those social occasions are powerful. When opportunities arise to actually forge a human relationship with a brother, take them. Take that opportunity. We'll mention in a moment making that opportunity, but for now, just simply let it be said, that's vital. Seek those times out when we can actually become a part of each other's lives. Don't just do this at home either. some of the best, fondest memories on trips that we've taken, Beth and I. Was thinking the other day of times when we've gone somewhere else, you know, going on our honeymoon or going on a vacation that we took a few years ago, and being able to, on those trips, meet with saints wherever it might be, in Cork, Ireland, or in Scottsdale, Arizona, or in wherever you find yourself. And what an enjoyable thing it is to get to meet the saints in those places, to get to meet the Christians there, and see these people who you've never seen before in this life, and probably odds are overwhelmingly that you will never see them again in this life. But now you know they're there, and you know who it is that's working in that place. You know who it is that's facing the same trials and facing down the same adversary and doing all of the work that you're trying to do here. They're doing it there, and they're good at it. They're doing well. They love God the same way you do. Now you know that, brother. And you know if I ever go back there, I'll be able to see him again. And we'll have this same warmth and even greater love than we had at that first meeting. That's such a great blessing. It's remarkable how much encouragement we can receive from meeting those great people in other parts of the world that you might not ever return to, knowing that they serve and love the same God and will be doing it long after you return home. You can do a lot of good as well by dropping in to visit them. A lot of those places are strengthened immeasurably when they see someone who is from Tulsa, Oklahoma, has come and worshiped with us today. What a great thing that they were here with us. And that adds a lot to their services. The same way we mentioned the same thing. We have people who pass through for whatever reason it might be. Thank you for coming and worshiping with us, making that a part of your itinerary. What a great thing to be able to share this wealth with each other. There are special opportunities that we have to avail ourselves of these resources. We find some mentions in the scripture of the letters being read. Paul will say, you know, he writes to the Colossians and says, kind of send this letter on down the road and get the one from Laodicea and read it, because I want you to pay attention to that one too. I've thought several times, wouldn't that have been a special day in the church when you received a letter from an apostle? You know, Peter wrote something that we need to hear, and so we're going to have that as our sermon this morning, I think is probably what that would feel like. We got a letter from Peter. We got a letter from Paul. We got a communication from the apostles. Wouldn't that have been a special occasion? I don't know if they had gospel meetings in the first century. I doubt they did, at least in our usual format. I don't know if they had special singings and vacation Bible school or whatever it might be, quarterly special studies and whatever other program people might have, but they certainly had times outside the Lord's day when they would gather to worship God and edify each other. And we create some of those same opportunities as well as a part of our work usually. Take advantage of those. This is where we can receive these benefits. We need to find them. We need to be sure that we're not letting those opportunities pass us by. Well, that then becomes the natural question. Why do we do that sometimes? Why do we miss out? Why is this a lesson that I need to preach? Why is this something that anyone would need greater attention to? Well, the first is really the primary problem that I'm trying to approach right now, is that we don't see the value. That's what this lesson is intended to correct, to show us the value, to remind ourselves, yes, this is something God has given to us for a purpose, because we need it, because it will enrich our lives, because you can enrich someone else's life. We have to see that value. Really and truly think about it. Do you not see what God is intending for us to get out of each other? Think of your own personal experience with fellow saints and what good they might have done for you. Think of the almost uncountable times we see in the Bible where the scriptures talk about what we are to do for one another and how we are to behave toward one another and how we are to love one another and to be family of one another. And if you do understand what is to be gained from this resource, why and how would you just let it sit there and get nothing from it? We don't do that with things that are valuable. You have food that you like in the house. You don't just let it sit there. That's my father-in-law, his mom used to say that apparently. She wouldn't buy the food that he liked because she would say, "You'll just eat it if I get that. Not going to get the brand that you like at the store. You'll just eat that right up." Yeah, that's exactly the point. That's what you do with something that's that kind of a valuable resource. You use it. You don't just want to stick it in the pantry. Sure, it'll last longer if you get the crummy stuff, but then it's not doing much good, is it? See the value in what God has given, this blessing of each other, and don't let it sit on the shelf. Of course, we might come up with a host of excuses. There are many that we go to. I'm just too busy. Too busy for worship assemblies, too busy to spend time with others away from the building, both, whatever it might be. Just don't have room in my life for anything else. And I recognize many of us are legitimately occupied with other obligations that we have to take seriously. We have to make room for. God expects you to work. God expects you to take care of ill family members. God expects you to raise your children. God expects you to devote time to your spouse. Those things are absolutely true. But a good test might be to think about how many things we do that we decide we aren't too busy for. How many things we decide that this is deserving of my time, and figure out where time for God's people ranks in that hierarchy. Does it rank where it should? Or if we put it in a lower position because we just really don't want to as much? Say, it's not my personality to get to know other people. I understand that excuse. I really do. It's not really mine either. I've talked before about being pretty happy keeping to myself. And that is a struggle for me. But it has to be my personality to get to know other people. If I'm a Christian, if I'm a member of the Lord's house, of His family, I need to know who those other people are. There are too many of those commands that we talked about, those one another commands, and too much instruction about the nature of the church to go it alone as a Christian. And we say, I don't really know any of these people, or I don't even like any of these people. None of them share my interests. None of them are the kind of people I'd normally go around and hang out with. Plain and simple, you need to know these people. Do what is necessary to get to know them. As an addition to that, I've found very often most people who will say that they do not have good relationships with any of the people they worship with, it's very common that they have not tried to make good relationships with any of the people they worship with. Can there be a connection there between those two? If I walk around the same people all the time and I don't ever make eye contact with anyone, I don't ever say hello to anyone, I don't ever shake hands with anyone, and then I say, "Well, nobody shook my hand, nobody looked at me, nobody said hello. What did I do, though?" Now, we must say, sometimes we try, and it is still difficult. It is still difficult to make that friend, to penetrate into that group of people who seem like they're all having a party and I might be on the outside. That's why we are stressing the need for us all to do this. It is a need for every person here to take to heart the things that we're talking about this morning. That family is made up of individuals, and we each bear the same responsibility to each other. To have that warmth, that preference for one another, that simply needs to be a part of our lives with no excuses made. Maybe we lack commitment. If God's work is important to us, then the people who carry out that work must be important to us as well. It simply can't be any other way. You would not find anyone who says, "I'm a diehard fan of pick a sports team. I'm a diehard fan of OU football. You say, oh, okay, well, who's, I can't remember, who's playing quarterback for them this year? I don't know. Well, the coach, he's a pretty good one. It's old, I can't remember his name. I don't know who the coach is. Do you ever go to the games?
No,
don't ever go to the games. You watch them play, though? Nah, I don't really get to watch them that often. Look at the box scores? I mean, do you know any of the stats? Not so much. I don't really have time to check that sort of stuff. But I love OU football, let me tell you. You'd say, no, you don't. You don't know anything about it. You don't pay any attention to it. You don't have any involvement or investment in it. You don't associate with anybody that actually has anything to do with the team or that cares about it. You're not a fan. If we don't care about each other, it may indicate that deep down we don't really care about what we are all tasked with doing. Because we are all tasked with that same thing, ultimately. We will do it in different ways. There is that diversity of gifts that Paul will talk about in 1 Corinthians, for instance. But that unity of purpose, that unity of spirit. And if I just really don't have any interest in what you're doing, that might say that I don't have any interest in what the Lord wants to do through you. I may not care as much about the Lord's cause as I think. And I'll say this as gently as possible. If you don't really see the benefit of being with God's people, and if you don't really care about whether or not you're doing anything to help them in your spiritual lives, it's very difficult for me to take seriously if you say you love them. I love my fellow Christians. I love God's people. I'm not going to do anything for them. I love the church. I'd do anything for the saints. Don't call me for help. Don't expect me to be there for worship. Don't expect me to study with you. Do we love each other? Or do we like saying we love each other? How we act towards each other will surely tell which one of those it is. Well, let's consider in these last few moments, how do we fix the problem? What can I do to improve? And I know you understand this, but I do want to say it as well. I am not pointing fingers at anyone else that I don't also point at myself. I know this is a need that I have. I know it's one that all of us really can improve in. And I also recognize in this particular time in our history, as I am looking out at a sea of masked faces, I understand this has not been the regular season for let's all get together and hang out. Let's all have a big group hug. How about it? That hasn't been happening lately, has it? I don't know when that will start happening again. Pray God it soon. I was talking to Brother Farron this morning. Beth and I are about to go on vacation. We're leaving this Thursday to go to Colorado. And I'll be gone next Sunday. You'll get a break from me. But when I come back, I'm going to be looking out at actual faces again. And I can't tell you how happy I am to think about that. Being able to actually see some of you I haven't seen from the nose down. So there will be some fun surprises there in store for us all. But I realize that this has been an unusual time, but that doesn't solve the root need to say, can I still be involved in someone's life even if I can't give them a hug? Can I still call them? Can I still speak to them? Can I still wave hello to them? Can I still have that contact with a fellow Christian, even with those other things being gone that we're used to having? Absolutely, we can. All right, all those caveats being issued, how do we go about fixing the issue? There are some practical considerations I think we can make. If you're tempted to miss worship on Sunday morning because you're not getting enough sleep on Saturday night, go to bed early on Saturday night. Take care of that problem. You have too many other things going on in your life that you can't cut out one night a month to maybe go visit with someone who would enjoy a visit, consider trimming some things off of your schedule because no one needs to be that busy. Arrange that week so that you leave time for opportunities that might come up in the week. Don't leave excuses hanging in front of you because of poor planning or effort. Decide that you're going to make time for Christians. Simply do that. Just consider the practical aspect. What might I need to do? What might I need to change in my life to make sure that God's people are a part of my life? Understand that it might be uncomfortable. That's why I say be willing to go out on a limb to succeed in this effort. It might be uncomfortable and difficult to forge relationships with each other. It may not come naturally. Because of the nature of this group, a lot of times it won't come together naturally because we are not all members of this group. We are not all members of the Lord's church or of this congregation in particular because we share the same love for cooking, because we have all of the same hobbies, or because we are all of the same age bracket and we have the same references, or because we are all in the same socioeconomic status, and if we were to take a vacation together, we would all want to go and be able to go to the same places, and we have time off at the same times and can have a cookout in the same neighborhood because we all live in exactly the same place in town. Those things aren't true. What unites us is really that one thing, that we have faith in Jesus Christ and we are devoted to serving His cause. That leaves the door open for a host of differences that we will have between each other. And that includes our personalities. That includes how we get along with each other, the kinds of things we find funny, the kinds of things we find enjoyable to do, the places we want to go to eat. All of those sorts of things might end up being totally different. So that might make it difficult to say, I'm going to be friends with this person no matter what. You may not have anything in common with them. And you may just be that person that making a friend out of nowhere doesn't come easily to. Obviously, this doesn't need to be carried out to an extreme where we're truly making ourselves miserable. You have social anxiety. You don't have anything in common with this person. But you say, I'm going to take a 3-day road trip weekend with them and we're just going to come back best buddies. Don't do that. But a little discomfort won't kill us. Deciding, I've never met this guy before, I'm going to go meet him today. Maybe it'll be awkward, it'll be uncomfortable, but I'm going to go do it. That's not going to be the end of the world. Take the first step. Make the first offer. Go out to lunch with somebody that you don't know very well. Be willing to put yourself into that little bit of discomfort for the great good that it can accomplish for all of us eventually. Think about the matter from both sides. I've mentioned this several times. If you aren't motivated by what you can get out of something, maybe your inner goodness will help you consider the other person. You may have strong Christian family and faithful friends and dozens of people that you know you could call upon on any Tuesday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and they would come running. But the person next to you at a singing may not. They may not have anyone. Maybe they would be able to have you if you knew them a little better. You might not be bothered when some people are consistently absent from services with no excuse, but a member who loves you may stay up at night worrying about why you don't seem more committed. Think about the problem from both sides. Can I be doing something to help someone else? And finally, simply consider making a true commitment to God's people. That's the answer, the only final answer. We have to decide that having the relationships that God calls us to have is actually important to us, and then doing whatever we need to, figuring out what we need to do to fulfill that calling, to have that bond with God's people, to be able to sing with a straight face, blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. And that's what I recommend to us this morning. I thank you so much for your time. I've gone a little bit overboard, a little bit over time from what I intended and from what is usual. Grateful for your patience. And I hope as we consider these things that we recognize what we are discussing isn't a matter of having friends. It isn't just a matter of having a fun social club, something to do on the weekends, something to keep ourselves occupied, something to kind of fill that spot in our lives. We're talking about fellowship with people. We're talking about a resource, a benefit that we derive ultimately from our relationship with God. Something that matters because we belong to Him in the first place and want to encourage others to do so as well. That's why it has significance, because it has to do ultimately with our relationship to Him. And that, we could not leave here this morning without reminding ourselves, without being very certain we understand that that relationship is top priority. Your fellowship with God will determine the ultimate destiny of your soul, if you are with Him or if you are against Him. And so this morning, if a decision in that regard needs to be made, you need to respond to the Lord, to no longer be at enmity with Him, to no longer be in strife against God, but to walk with Him, to walk in fellowship with God, to be on His side. If you need to make a decision in that regard this morning, come to the Lord in faith, in obedience, in repentance, in whatever it might be that is necessary to restore a relationship with the One who made you and who loves you more than any other. We can assist with that. If you have a need, make it known. Come forward while we stand and sing.